Well, welcome back to On Further Review. Glad to be back here with you, Micah, and talking some sports. Feels like it's in full slate right now.
Every sport that is watchable, that are things that are desired to be watched, is currently on.
Everything is on. Last night I was flipping between playoff field baseball,
hockey, and lacrosse. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
maybe a little bit of lacrosse though. Playoff baseball, NHL's already, dropped, and NBA basketball a little bit. I know most people, myself included, I kind of wait till a little later in the year to really get into basketball. Football's obviously in full throat here.
Had a crazy crazy college year so far with Alabama losing and some upsets there of Ohio State, and like all the big dogs are kind of looking vulnerable.
Right.
Somehow Oklahoma survives a scare versus Texas by making the sun stand still and then scoring 40 points in 2 seconds. And all of a sudden you got a win over the Longhorns there. That's
after our last conversation. It'll always be a success when OU finishes above Texas in the SEC standings. So
yeah, it's looking like that will probably happen. At least that part.
It seems that way. But yeah, a lot of fun storylines and stuff so far. A lot of just like you said, a lot of good watching of any sport that you're really into. It's there for you.
Even lacrosse. Lacrosse. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with lacrosse. Good team sport. But obviously for us, and I think for the majority of people, football kind of takes precedent over a lot of different sports this time of year. It's where a lot of most of the money is. It's where most of the eyes are as far as watching, viewership, things like that. And we love it. We love to talk about it. We love to break it down. One thing that we are definitely committed to on Further Review here is making sure we hold ourselves accountable, right? So I don't know.
Well, it's mostly me holding you accountable and you holding me accountable, because I'm not going to mention any of my bad takes from previous times.
That's fair. There's a reason there's two of us here. So
yes.
And so we were thinking about last year, I believe it was, we started talking with this new crop of quarterbacks, right? Fresh off the draft, guys like Tua, Burrow, Herbert, Hurts, kind of all came into the league, and we made, probably just, started talking out of our ass a little bit about where we thought, these guys were going to go, but just based on where they were from college, how they had started, I think at that point, maybe one or two seasons, or at least a preseason under their belt. And I remember specifically, and I give props to you, remember specifically you stating that you thought Jalen Hurts would be a starter, would be somebody that could actually compete in this league. And that was something I didn't know if that was going to be feasible with him and his skill set. We see, at least for right now, the time being, I know they brought in the sans mustached the kid from Jacksonville as
Gardner-ish.
His backup.
Gardner.
But no signs of Hurts losing his position so far. And I think he's played pretty well. Obviously, we were both high on Herbert. Herbert's shown what he can do already.
It's hard not to be high on Herbert. It's hard not to be excited about what that guy can do.
Yeah, and I think the majority of people that watch football consistently, the NFL consistently, know that a lot of what has gone on for the Chargers has seemed to be more of the coaching aspects of things, and it seems like they've got a good coach in Staley there as well. Burrow, we both expressed, we were worried about his health. Which has already been a topic here yet this year as well. Been incredible. Yep. Him and his buddy from LSU, Chase, have just been dynamic this year so far. And I hope he stays healthy. I hope they can. And the Bengals are surprising everybody, tied or just behind, maybe half a game. I'm not sure where they're at as far as the standings for the AFC North.
They're right there with
Baltimore right now.
Yeah.
And then I think both of us were a little down. I know I was definitely down on Tua as being a bona fide starter. And to be honest, we've seen that play out last year and into this year. Last year with some Fitch magic coming in relief or perhaps in benching. This year, perhaps more of the injury part concern. and seeing a little bit of Jacoby Brissett over there in Miami as well. So we're already seeing, and it's always fascinating to me on these quarterbacks because every year the storylines are different, right? Every year this guy is great, this guy's trash. We see guys turn things around. We see Carson Wentz be a MVP candidate and now running around on broken ankles and
both broken,
like just kind of a beat up guy, but trying to still will himself and Indianapolis to wins and things like that. You know, we've seen guys like Lamar Jackson. There's a ton of conversation about him as far as his longevity in the league as well. And so what I think we see is, for better or for worse, we overvalue the quarterback position, and rightfully so.
Yeah,
right? It's a tough position to fill. It's usually a position where one person gets a shot, and it's not multiple people doing it, especially in the pro ranks. And so it got us thinking just some of the things back in sports history here, specifically the quarterbacks or the organizations that have gone back to back with good quarterbacks or great quarterbacks. So today on Further Review, we want to talk about some of those dynamic duos, those guys that throughout the course of history and maybe, you know, looking ahead to, or guys we have nowadays that are part of a tandem, a back-to-back, if it were, for organizations at the quarterback position. When I say that, who comes to mind for you?
I mean, right away, and I think of this too because of, like, we're talking about Herbert, right? How great Herbert is or appears to be so far, right? And he comes after what should be a Hall of Fame career in Philip Rivers. And so to think about going from one great quarterback to the next great quarterback, to me, being a Green Bay fan, the guy that comes to mind right away is Favre and Rodgers. That's who I grew up seeing, right?
Yeah.
Here in the West, a lot of folks are 49ers fans. So the Montana and Young connection is the one that's commonly talked about as being one of the best dynamic duos, and could make the case for the most successful in terms of number of Super Bowl appearances and victories that they've had over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Guys like that, you know, maybe some of the guys, you know, we'll get into each of these different duos, but I think we all would agree, you know, guys like Favre to Rodgers, Manning to Young, stuff like that. And I appreciate you bringing up Phil Rivers too, because I think unfortunately with the lack of a ring, he kind of gets lost in the shuffle, but Philip Rivers was a very, very good quarterback. And to go from a Philip Rivers offense to, or Philip Rivers at the helm of your offense to a kid like Herbert, who seems like he's going to be around for a bit.
Is
a luxury. And as Packer fans, we understand this. I understand this, at least going from Favre to Rodgers is historical. That you do. There's so many fan bases, as we'll get to how short this list is, there's so many fan bases that don't have that luxury of going from one really good quarterback to the next. There's always middling around and some sort of QB purgatory.
Some fan bases have never had a good quarterback, period. I mean, I'm looking at the Bears.
Yep.
I am looking at the Lions, even though somehow magically the Rams have taken their bad quarterback and made them a somewhat decent quarterback in Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, but I think Stafford was good in Detroit, but
he was decent, but he was never like, no one was going to, he wasn't turning the common head, right? He wasn't necessarily, you know, people knew that he was a decent quarterback. We kind of gave him some like, okay, passive respect. It's an, oh yeah, we know Stafford's a good quarterback, but no one was going to bet on him to win a game, right? Yeah, when it came down to it, no one was going to say, oh, yeah, I think Matthew Stafford can win this one for the Rams, unless they're playing like the Jets or something. Right?
Well, I would always bet on him for the backfield cover, for sure.
He was last minute
touchdowns and stuff like that. But yeah,
I mean, he didn't have the structure around him to be able to really succeed.
Right.
And that's one of the issues with organizations, that they just can't seem to get the quarterback right. I mean, look at the Jets, right? Who's their best quarterback, right? probably Ty Pennington and Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
So that says a lot about, I mean, obviously Joe Namath back in the day or guys like that, or Johnny Unitas and guys like that. Right.
Right.
Where it's, yeah, but Chad recently, Pennington. Recently, yeah. like who's the, yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's what's interesting to me about these back-to-back type quarterbacks is, some of these organizations seem like they hog up, right? You know, like you go from Favre to Rodgers and you just wonder how that happened. How did other people, you know, pass? Hindsight's always 20/20, but how did people pass on some of these guys to even make this possible? And, or maybe credit to some of these organizations or the general managers in those years or moments of hanging on to a guy, you know, so, just to be able to continue or have a chance to continue that type of continuity.
So for we'll go through these different lists of successful back to back great quarterbacks. I want to begin with, you know, almost two decades ago, you have this first round pick out of Washington State University. He was just recently paid as the highest paid quarterback in the league, over $100 million for a new contract. Played very well, multiple, I think at least a Super Bowl appearance, really turned around a dead franchise there in Foxborough, Massachusetts. So I'll make the case right now that the Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady case, I mean, and you kind of see people always talk about, like, I can't believe the Patriots passed up on Brady until like the sixth, whatever round it was, where the case may be. But when you look at who they had under center and Drew Bledsoe, they weren't looking at it. They weren't looking to change that anytime soon. They just thought, hey, we'll get, value for pick kind of thing. Tom Brady was this unknown guy and they had this Pro Bowler, quarterback in Drew Bledsoe that was getting the job done quite well and was being pretty successful in doing so.
Yeah, Bledsoe. I mean, he had him building. The Patriots are coming out of the depths of the history of their franchise, and he had him on the right ship and getting him, getting this thing rebuilt, like you said, under a guy who was not just able but ready to lead this team.
Yeah.
And we know from that transition, the injury that comes to Bledsoe, and as they all say, the rest is history as far as Brady coming in and never looking back in his 20 plus year career now as well. So I agree. I think how great Tom Brady was, we'll get into that with some of these other guys, but I don't know if there's another duo where the second guy just outshined the first guy so badly or so drastically what Bledsoe, Bledsoe didn't bring them a championship. You can make the case he got him there to the first one for Brady.
Sure.
But
even the one back in 96, right? When they played.
Right. When they went up against Favre. Yep. Right.
And then was the one before that too they went to as well? Or
I know they had a playoff run with them, and then they had the 96 championship, I think was like a little early, basically. I think that Patriots team was a little, if my memory's correct, that Patriots team was maybe one of those young teams a little bit ahead of their time in 96, which was proven as they went on to dominate the 2000s.
Well, they dominated the 2000s too, especially the early 2000s, with some of the same – some of the same players that Bledsoe played with and did pretty well with, right?
Right.
It's just interesting to see, to see how well they did there. 96 isn't that far removed from 2001, right? It's only, 5 years removed. So right. You have like the Brewskis and the Vrabels and guys like that. And the, it had a fairly decent team back in those days that were competitive, right? I mean, you think about how difficult it is to get to a Super Bowl, how difficult it is to get to that big game. Philip Rivers, for example, Dan Marino, right? These are guys who we would categorize as being great quarterbacks who would never got over that hump. Like that's why we like football so much, as it's such a team sport, is it's really hard for one player, great or not great, to be able to carry an entire team over that finish line. And which makes Brady such a anomaly is his ability to do that, is his ability to make so many Super Bowls.
Right.
I think, but the thing for me is, I think it points to the greatness of Tom Brady is the fact that he can make such a stark contrast with Bledsoe, because Bledsoe was a good quarterback. And he had over 3,000 yards passing the year before. And again, this is an era when, you know, it wasn't where if you breathe towards the receiver, it's pass interference, right?
Right.
This was back when men played football. No, but it's like this was back before, you know, Brady reinvented the rules about getting hit. And obviously he saw what happened to Bledsoe. So I can't blame him for wanting to not get hit anymore. But no,
yeah, they protect
3,000 yards was a phenomenal accomplishment. And that was in the year 2000. He was a Pro Bowler in the year 2000. Bledsoe was. He had just signed on $100 million contract. And if it wasn't for a crazy hit in that Jets game, which if you want to go to that down the fun rabbit trail, you know, that came off of a rescheduled game due to 9/11, right? And so if 9/11 doesn't happen, if that doesn't happen, is there the hit on Drew Bledsoe? Does Brady ever come out of off the bench if Bledsoe isn't hit? And are we looking at, you know, what happens? So you're
saying for all of our Bills and Bills, Jets, Dolphins fans that
can blame
Al Qaeda? Yeah. Basically, okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Brady, yeah, and if you want to go, if you're young enough where you don't remember that play off the top of your head, go back and look at that hit on Bledsoe, because you want to talk about player safety. I don't think there was even a flag thrown on it.
I don't think so. And
he
was in fear for his life. He almost died. Like, we're not being hyperbolic about that at all. Like, he literally almost died.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is he came back, right? He came back from that to the Bills. And I think he had a couple of 4,000 yard passing seasons.
Yeah.
With the Bills. I don't remember if he had one of the Cowboys, but like he did, like the guy is a legend. Like,
he's still playing, right.
But compared to the shadow of Brady, he looks like, you know, Pop Warner guy, which is, again,
right,
I think points to how good Brady is.
Yes.
And just like,
I think the majority of quarterbacks, and even the majority of quarterbacks on this list, if they had Brady coming after them, would be overshadowed. He just casts such a long shadow. It might be a deflated shadow, but it's a long one.
I want to begin with that one because I think people forget about Bledsoe, right?
Yeah,
we forget about how good he really was, and we think, he just run a mill. Like, no, this guy was a Pro Bowler. He got the Pats, which was, they were called the Patsies back in the day, right?
Right.
He got them to a Super Bowl appearance.
94, 96, 2001.
If it wasn't 02. for Bledsoe coming off the bench and throwing throwing a couple of darts there and getting a touchdown, do the Patriots even get to the 2001 Super Bowl? Right. Maybe not. But.
And I don't always love the Pro Bowl stat because, you know, nowadays, if you play in the Super Bowl, you know, for a while now, if you play in the Super Bowl, you're not in. So it's a little watered down of a stat. But to your
back
point,
in the day, though, was a valid stat back in the 90s.
And it's still a recognition of you being one of the top, you know, top three, four quarterbacks in your conference or top two. And to your point, he went to the Bills in 02, made a Pro Bowl that year. Bledsoe kept on playing. And it is kind of a shame. All the credit goes to Tom Brady, but credit needs to go to Drew Bledsoe for how good he was. So I definitely would recognize him in this list of dynamic duos. I think, as you mentioned, case could well be made for them being the greatest pairing. Brady has a lot of that weight, probably 70-30 for the pairing, but
I'm thinking more 80-20.
Or 80-20. Quite incredibly so. But I don't think it's wrong to say that Bledsoe, had he been healthy, had he stayed with that Patriots team, could have very easily won the first couple Super Bowls that Brady did as well. So it's just one of those things where the injury comes in and affects them. Interesting thing as we move through this list now, Bledsoe goes on and plays for the Bills, plays well, plays for the Cowboys, as you mentioned as well, played decent for them. Obviously, that was the end of his career. But a lot of these quarterbacks that are the first in the dynamic duos that we're talking about go on and keep playing. So it's interesting to see how, whether it's injury, whether it's transition of an organization, which is the second group in I was going to get into, which is, you know, the Montana Young one.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most obvious ones, especially for
But that was kind of first transition, right? I mean, we just talked about Tom Brady. Patriots are transitioning once he decides he's going to Tampa Bay, wins the Super Bowl. We all know that recent history. But Montana was kind of, you know, fairly similar in that transition from Joe Montana, this great of the 80s, this great of the 49ers, you know, lore. And all you need to know about the transition between Manning and Young is Young's post-conference of his first Super Bowl win saying, "Is it off yet?" Referring to the monkey on his back. It was feisty. It was, controversial and to some people, I'm sure, but talk about two greats here with Montana rather, and Young here. What stands out to you about that duo?
Well, the first thing that stands out is the number of Super Bowl appearances and wins there, right? That's to me, that's the most obvious thing. I think that's the era that put the 49ers on the map as far as recent history, as far as being a contending powerhouse in the NFC. Like how many, like, you know, we think about the great games between, you know, the Packers and the Niners in the 90s or the Niners and the Cowboys in the 90s with Jerry Jones Cowboys and Troy Aikman versus those guys. Like, right. These are the, you know,
yeah,
this is the powerhouse to put it on the map. Right. So to me, it's just the number of appearances. Like you think about, like, okay, if you go through, okay, what makes a good quarterback, right? Like, how do we know what's a good quarterback, what's not a good quarterback, right? We do, you know, this is a game that's based on wins and losses, right? You have a winner and a loser based on the number of points you score. It's based on get to a championship or not a championship, right? We can break it down to like completions and first downs and avoiding turnovers and whatnot. But really, it boils down to, you know, these guys play because they want to win a title, because they want to win the championship. That's the goal of the game, right? It's to score the most points and be the one stand up on top at the end. And Montana and Young did that successfully, I think, total of 7 times for their franchise, right? It's just the number of Super Bowls that they've won together is quite remarkable.
And I would say for this pairing specifically, I know we just said, you know, make the case for Bledsoe Brady as far as maybe the most dynamic duo Brady.
I think it's most interesting. I don't think it was dynamic Brady and Bledsoe. I think it's the most interesting and that people forget about.
Oh, sure.
How good Bledsoe was.
Granted, that's a fair point for sure. I think this one, and maybe it's nostalgia for me. Maybe it's because these are the years I grew up getting into football, but I think about the teams in the NFL. There's always been the bottom feeders, you know, every year, every decade. But you think about the competitions that, you know, the Elway is around, you know, Aikman and the Cowboys were always a big rival for both. I think the end of Montana's years, but definitely Young's years. Yeah. Just some of the stalwart type teams, the Bills were great. Jim Kelly over there. You know, the teams that you talked about, you know, football and maybe Super Bowl championships being a little bit of a war of attrition where it's just the last person standing. And for this team to have been there so many times. And if you look back, I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of a really close one, but I just think of that Young Super Bowl versus the Bengals. I mean, they also just blew teams out sometimes in the Super Bowl too, which nowadays it feels like every Super Bowl is, you know, really tight and really close, but or has been, you know, fairly recently, but they were just very, very dominant. And granted, you have the likes of, you know, that defense was very good. And like we said, the supporting cast, but for those two specific individuals, you know, Montana, who then goes on and plays with Kansas City for a few years as well. But then transitioning into Young. And it was kind of interesting to me too, because it was also the a little bit. I don't think Young gets a lot of credit for the makeup of quarterbacks today and the mobility, because I think for him, he was one of those quarterbacks that kind of gets lost now in history of one of the first real, he was quick. He moved a lot. They used him a lot as far as rushing and, or maybe not rushing so much as just mobility in the pocket, scrambling for yards. Nowadays, aside from Tom Brady and maybe one or two others, but especially guys getting drafted, you're not seeing too many guys get drafted and be heralded as forever starters that are just pure pocket passers. Like, everything is mobility. Everything is being able to get outside a little bit. You know, even these guys we mentioned at the top, you know, for guys going into their second year of the Herberts, the Tuas, the Burrows, you know, Burrow might be the closest out of that group, the Hurts, to more of a, you know, just pocket passer, but he gets out and there's the mobility there too. And just that part of the game of quarterbacking, I look at Young as being a foundation.
And I think in that light too, guys like today, like Jalen Hurts or Burrow or Herbert, right? Like, they're not considered to be like mobile quarterbacks, really, right? They can get around the pocket, they can move around right now, but they're mostly a pocket pass. They're mostly a pass, right? They're not going to try to beat you with their legs, right?
Correct. Where,
if you put those same guys, and I'm not saying they would do well in the 90s, right? But let's presume, like, okay, if you put those guys in the 90s and the early 2000s, they would have been considered a very mobile quarterback because of what the difference would have been. So you can see the evolution, the evolution of the game going forward. And to your point,
Montana, even just the baseline. Yeah.
Yeah. The baseline has shifted over the last couple of years. And, you know, Young was probably one of the earliest pioneers of that shift. There was Young and how, you know, agile he was in the pocket. His ability to elude rush and things like that, and get outside and make, you know, basically just, you know, toss it to Jerry Rice, which is always a fine and
wise. Yeah, that's not a bad. I'm sure a lot of people would
not a bad. I'd love to idea. Have them.
Yeah, yeah. But
so you talked about like the you know, how dominant they were and their win over the Bengals, right? Which brings me up to my next dynamic duo. Ken Anderson and Boomer Esiason. Obviously, you know Boomer as you know, on football.
CBS desk,
CBS and cast, all that stuff. And whatnot. So, any thoughts on those two? On those two characters? Again, this is the '90s era of great. Seems to be somewhat decent quarterbacking in this era of
I think gunslingers like back in the day. For Ken Anderson, probably more in like the, you know, in the '80s, mid '80s, I think Boomer came in, I want to say 84 or something like that, in that range. Yeah. I think these are guys that it boils down to what data you're picking from to pick your greatest quarterbacks or really good quarterbacks or duos and stuff like that. Because the thing for the two of them is the Super Bowl ranks, right? Or the lack thereof. I think that should, to me, that stat is a team stat. And I think when we evaluate positions, we have to evaluate what they did at their position. And I think a lot of times the Super Bowl rings or the championship rings, whatever sport you're talking about, that's an easy stat to just say this person has this many, this person has less. I think when you look back at Ken Anderson, and granted, these are, you know, I remember watching Boomer Esiason play. Obviously, he's been in the CBS booth now for a while. I didn't get the chance to see Ken Anderson play live. I've seen him on NFL films. I've seen him on reruns and stuff like that. Again, I think you talked about guys today, if we brought him back into the 90s on mobility, I think if you brought guys from the 80s into today, their stats would bloom and blossom. Like, guys that put up stats, guys that put up passing stats up until about, we'll say 1985, 86, something like that. Some of these older heroes are just so remarkable to me because the game wasn't even set up that way. You know, it was a run first game for many, many decades in origin. And so guys like Ken Anderson, you know, he's got an offensive player of the year award. He's got an NFL MVP in 81. I mean, this is a guy that I think you talk about guys that get lost in the shuffle. I think he's somebody that's not recognized. And maybe it's Cincinnati. Maybe it's the fact that he didn't win a ring. Maybe it's the fact that Cincinnati has not been a dominant force of late. I think, you know, those early 90s boomer years were probably the last great years for a Cincinnati Bengal fan.
Yeah.
And we're talking 30 yeah. years ago.
Yeah.
And so I think that detracts from them. But as far as I believe they belong in this type of conversation. What Ken Anderson did.
The conversation about the number of these back-to-back quarterbacks is such a small list over, yeah. you know, the 100 and whatever years of NFL history.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I think they should be included is just because, they deserve to be. Right. I think they're, you know, and so, and one more too, I think, and before we talk about this group, this duo here, Jim Kelly and Doug Flutie, there's a year break between Kelly and Flutie. So if you want to get technical and talk about, okay, they're not back to back. But is it, I don't know if this is just simply nostalgia. I went back and we looked at the number of back to back quarterbacks and kind of who made names for themselves. But it seems like the 80s and the 90s, and we talk about Stabler and Plunkett a little bit earlier than that too, right?
Those guys deserve to be on this list.
I think this and Plunkett's interesting because he was an older quarterback, right? It's not a veteran going to a young guy. It's a veteran going to another veteran, which is just a different type of a dynamic there. Right. So you have Stabler and Plunkett, Kelly and Flutie. Again, Flutie maybe asterisk because of the year between, but we can blame Donald Trump for that. And if for reference,
the USFL.
Your episode in the USFL.
Go back in the archives. Yeah,
you can go back and see that if he wasn't around, maybe it's maybe it is back to back. But what made the 80s and 90s such a dynamic era for just gunslinging off the wall quarterbacking? Again, you still got hit a lot, and Bledsoe almost died out there on the field.
Yeah, it was still much more physical.
Still have a very physical game than it is today, and yet you have just these, you know, monsters. Is it recency bias that we're afflicted with here, or
is it really
just some really great quarterbacking, and we just were lucky to have that?
It really is. I think if you look back, and I'll retract. I always kind of bristle when we go back and forth between decades and even the physicality. I know most of us see like the penalties and what's, you know, penalized as far as the physicality of back in the day versus today, but guys are flying around today at different speeds than they were, you know, maybe even in the 80s and stuff. And all this comes back to me to money and investment. So I think in the late 70s, going into the 80s, you really saw this sport start taking the mantle from baseball as far as America's sport to watch.
Yeah.
And that began with these prolific athletes, specifically at quarterback. It also began with the more intentional type training and nutrition. And, you know, maybe even in the 80s, they didn't have the nutrition like they did today. But as far as specialized type roles, like a quarterback would be, where from a much younger age, and you're seeing it more and more and more. You see kids that are 15 years old that are getting offered D1 scholarships, you know, to come and replace somebody in 5 years at a major university. I mean, you got shows like at Netflix QB1, where we're tracking high schoolers. You know, Spencer Rattler, Oklahoma here, is kind of falling victim to this, where the hype is so great of this young high school kid, because he is being specialized and groomed and brought up for quarterbacking. And to me, that really started in the 80s. And that's what grew the game and grew the popularity and grew not just the money, but the investment into the sport. Our guys like this is this crop of athletes. And I think it really just comes back to, you know, guys, to me, guys like Stabler, guys like Plunkett, guys in the 70s that I think like Tarkenton, like people like that, some of these like really fun to watch quarterbacking change the game from this rugby style run it out and huddle up mess into the thing of beauty that we see today of the passing and the prolific offenses. And so I think it was just kind of a combination of events, a perfect storm, if you will. in the 80s specifically, of you join this transition of offense with these guys that are just so well suited to fill those roles. And that's what kind of transitioned. So I'm not saying that these guys aren't great, because it also was the perfect storm of these guys being the guys to lead this type of sport. The guys like Elway, the guys like Ken Anderson, the guys like Jim Kelly, the guys like Joe Montana. You know, these are the guys that was the perfect type of casting of characters to grow this sport, and both their ability, their charisma, their, you know, just who they were as people and athletes. So I really think that that's why you see in the 80s this boom of quarterbacks. And I wonder, you know, 10, 15 years from now, even with elevated stats nowadays, if you're not just prone to the stats, if you actually, you know, sit down and watch these guys, I think the 80s have to be seen as just a decade of quarterback exponential progression, at exponential just showing of what you can be at that position. And I think to me, the biggest part of it is just the fine tuning, the specialization of that position specifically. You're not just the guy who takes the ball, hands it off three times. If you get behind the chains, you might throw it. Now we have offenses that are set up to pass first, the run and gun, the, you know, the Kelly offenses that we talked about in the Bills episode as well.
Yeah.
And so just these different quarterbacks that led that. And I think guys like Stabler, Pluckett, Ken Anderson, even Boomer Esiason, those are the guys that kind of get lost in the shuffle a little bit, but were also key elements of the game as a whole and the quarterback position as a whole and that development, at least to me.
That's what I see. I completely agree with you. And I think you see that the evolution of this position is being a on the field coach now, right? And you have guys who want more coaching abilities, ability to change plays, your ability to make decisions in the field, because these are seen kind of as these are the on the field generals that are out there, able to see the field and make decisions because they see the entire field right there. And so the decision making and the importance of the quarterback position has become infinitely more than it was back in the, you know, just 70s, which is, again, not in the history of total things. 1970s isn't all that long ago.
That long
1980s
ago,
or even 1990s. Right. So,
and I give these guys a lot of props too, just real quick. Because of those advancements for guys today, I was listening to someone, I forget who it was talking about the headset delay between college and the NFL. So the NFL, it cuts out, I think, like 10 seconds or 5-7 seconds, something like that, before the play is called. So the quarterback has dead air in his headset. And in college, I think that isn't the case. If I'm wrong, someone can correct me, but I think it kind of goes up until the snap. So up until the
interesting.
So somebody was talking about, why do we see college quarterbacks do really well and then come into the NFL and fail? There's a lot of different reasons, or just not do as well. But one of the things is them not being able to basically be fed what the play is or the check is or things like that up until the snap. But I think of that technology in general. Like you have guys like Ken Anderson probably didn't have a headset in his helmet. He probably had very little padding in his helmet.
Plunkett and Stabler didn't have any headsets in their helmet. Like,
These one bar guys, right? The guys that just had the whole helmet in general was quite different back then and stuff. So that to me, that's why these guys deserve credit for growing the sport, because of their intellect and their commitment to the game. To be as good as they were without all the advances we've made. And not taking away from guys today that are also really good. I'm not saying it's just the technology, but those things are added benefits that these guys didn't have. And so that's what makes, like, the specifically to me, the 80s, type quarterbacks just so impressive.
Yeah. They didn't have the ability to go look in the sideline at their Microsoft Surface and, what happened the last play.
What was that play? Like, right.
Like, they don't have that. They just have, hey, what did you see over there? And what did you know? It's all,
their evaluation wasn't, here, look at these last three plays that just happened kind of in replay. You know, their evaluation was, it was too high, dumbass. Why'd you throw it over there? You know, like,
that was their
evaluation. So just their own ability, their internal ability to be so intellectual about the game, as well as all the hard work put in, is just massively impressive to me.
So as you know, think about the past, now the future. I want to give you three, and maybe we'll say three and a half dynamic duos that are more in recent history. I'm going to list them off here, and I want you to make a case as for which one you think is the most intriguing. And then okay. We'll talk about maybe the half one here.
Before you do that, I just want to say to everybody that might be wondering, we're not going to break down the Favre-Rodgers thing in great detail. I mean, I know we alluded to it and talked about it because we could probably spend an entire episode, maybe two, doing that as Packer fans and all the memories.
I think it speaks for itself.
Obviously, it's one of those ones that everybody knows. And no one's done it, you know, three times. We'll see what happens with Jordan Love. I'm not anticipating that we're going to be the first to do three, but we'll see.
I don't think it'll be with Jordan Love.
I would agree.
If it's a third one, I don't think it'll be a Jordan Love. I think it'll have to be with someone else.
Right.
So here's the pairings that I think are interesting. Tony Romo to Dak Prescott, the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay.
Again, an asterisk between these two because there was a year between them, but nobody remembers who the quarterback was. Matt Hasselbeck to Russell Wilson with the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm.
Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
And the half one that I think is intriguing, and maybe just it'll be a question mark, we'll never know, is Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
So, again, I put that as a half category because we really don't know what Andrew Luck could have been. I mean,
yeah, I was thinking phenomenal of him if they belong on this list, right? Yeah.
He was phenomenal in college. I think he might be one playoff appearance or something like that, and with the Colts. But he was obviously retired very early. He was too smart for the NFL, and didn't want to mess up his head. He got beat up too.
His longevity would be, right there. Right. Yeah. I guess I'll dive into the half one and maybe share my thought. You share your thought, but the Manning's career with the Colts is incredible.
Yes.
You know, going into Luck, I agree. I think Luck, I don't know if, because he retired, I don't know if Luck will ever move out of the potential category. So I think we saw how good he could be. We also saw him get really banged up, which is part of why he left the league. The longevity would worry me on that one. It feels like that one could have been. It feels like the one that could have been for this list. But because it could have been, I personally would leave him off the duo list. I don't think there's a large enough body of work for Manning. Absolutely.
It seems like this is one where, you know, does Manning's legacy extend to cover the Luck years?
Right.
Is basically what we're looking at.
Right.
And on the opposite standpoint, you know, and why I made the case for Bledsoe and Brady, at least being one of the most intriguing dynamics is Bledsoe is able to carry his own water.
Yeah. And he showed that he,
right.
Yeah. And he had longevity too. Right.
Even Brady having, you know, a phenomenal career and is still, you know, top of his game. I think Bledsoe is still able to hold his own in a conversation of great quarterbacks. You know, he's at least have to talk about how great he was back in those days.
Right.
So I think if we kind of cross out a little, can I put an attract of Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, we don't really know what they're about. And, you know, we're never going to know because Andrew Luck retired so early.
The crazy part of it is Indy felt like they were here. Indy felt like they were at this list, and that's why they deserve a mention. Indy felt like they had the back-to-back. But I think just the events that I think if we had this conversation 3 years ago, we'd be earmarking that as one for this list. But obviously events that have transpired since and Luck leaving the game.
Which brings us to the other three people, right? So you have these three guys, Luck left the game, don't know what's going to happen, the injury's still out, right?
Yep.
So when you have like a list of like Tony Romo and Dak Prescott, Matt Hasselbeck and Russell Wilson, I think to me is, besides the year break, I think of these three pairings, Hasselbeck and Wilson make the strongest case because of longevity.
I would agree.
Yeah, and because of how successful Russell Wilson has been in the game. Of just, you know, making it happen and just, you know, being a dynamic quarterback in the NFL, right?
Russell Wilson may also be this might be a hot take, but to me, Russell Wilson might be one of the last like late round draft picks that we see become a superstar. I feel like because of the quarterback position is so overvalued, you see it every year. Guys reach for organizations reach for quarterbacks, so they draft them in the first two rounds because they don't want to miss a guy that could be. Obviously, Brady is the most significant late round quarterback and what he became, but I think Russell Wilson might be like right on that tail end of history where guys got overlooked that had great skill. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong. I love seeing guys that get drafted later have a good shot and make a good career, but he wasn't even supposed to start. They brought in Matt Flynn. Wasn't because he threw 5 touchdowns against the Lions, but he wasn't supposed to start and he came in and wowed him. And then his pairing, I think, is one of those guys that gets overlooked, and that's Matt Hasselbeck and what he did in Seattle with Holmgren
and bringing that organization Seattle on the map. Absolutely. Like that was incredible to see what they did, the number of playoff appearances they got to and things like that. And because of Holmgren, we think about the Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson years, but Holmgren and Hasselbeck were the ones that really put that franchise back on the radar of one to contend with.
Yep. And I'd say, so I would agree out of the couple we're looking at, which was Flacco to Lamar, Hasselbeck to Wilson, Romo to Dak. I think the Romo Dak one is interesting as well. I don't know where Romo is going to be remembered in the as years go on. And he's now Boomer Esiason, 10 years from now, where he's just mostly known as an analyst or someone that talks about the game versus his actual playing. I hate that lack of championships hurt some of these guys.
The lack of playoff wins and the lack of, playoff appearances to me hurts Romo, right? I get the championship appearances because, it is a team sport and you have a lot of stuff like that, but I think great quarterbacks at least should be able to get to the playoffs,
championship
and win stuff like, win a couple games there.
Yeah.
I think Roma's an interesting character because if you had just such a ascending and bright star in the 90s with the Cowboys, right? You just had domination and really setting themselves up as America's team, and they kind of fall off the wagon and quite dramatically so too. And so Romo, I think, is the first to be able to really put the Cowboys back on the map, because they were never off the map, right? They were still America's, they're still a very popular team, right?
Right.
But he was the first to at least put them back into contention.
He was,
as being a viable franchise and someone to reckon with, and that's
possible Super Bowl contenders. Like
I wouldn't say Super Bowl contenders, or just contenders playoff contenders. They're gonna, there might be one that's gonna win a division. So that's why I put Romo on the list of these guys, of just because of he kind of helped put that franchise back together.
And I would say with guys then on the flip side, like Dak, the Joe Flacco one, I think he had a couple of good years. I don't know if, and he helped obviously with the Ravens. He had Super Bowl championship. That Super Bowl year was quite a bit different than the rest of his career, as far as his stats and what he put up that year, especially in those playoffs. I still can't believe that they got to that one Super Bowl with the Denver cornerback just completely missing a go route, but that's just still incredible to me that transpired in, I think, an AFC championship game, or at least the one before. But to me, Flacco's not quite there as far as the list of them. But guys like Lamar, guys like Dak, I
think Lamar and Dak are to me, it's in the category of Andrew Luck, right?
Right.
So what would happen if they were to exit the NFL tomorrow? Right. I still think that the jury's going to be out. We can see how dynamic Lamar Jackson is or things like that. But I don't think there's enough body of work to be able to put them in a in a good or even great category yet. Like the jury is still, I mean, we've seen Lamar kind of struggle in the playoffs. We've seen him, you know, when it comes down to it in the, you know, okay, can we, you know, or even Dak Prescott too, like what can he do in the playoffs? Have we really haven't seen a whole lot of chances for him to show what he is able to do in the playoffs yet.
Right. I would say, and I'll preface it with this, me, myself personally, I'm always going to be maybe a little bit stick in the mud, head in the sand, whatever you want to say about wait and see, even winning the championship, even guys like, you know, even guys like Patrick Mahomes, and it's almost sports blasphemy to say that at this point, but to me, one championship ring, especially early in your career, say Dak goes on and wins the Super Bowl, say Lamar wins the Super Bowl in the next couple of years, to me, to cement yourself in the category of the guys we're talking about, of the Montana, Young, Bledsoe, Brady, Favre, Rodgers, Stabler, Pluckett, like to cement yourself in those types of categories, there has to be longevity. And so that's why these guys are interesting to me, is because to see if they can get there. Lamar to me will probably always be remembered in NFL history, a la Michael Vick, with his just supreme athletic ability in a sport of freak athletes. Like what he does, I think kids will be watching. My point is, like, I think maybe even the next generation will know who Lamar Jackson is because of his athletic ability.
I think it depends, if
he's in a flash in the pan.
But I don't know. Like,
no,
I don't know. I mean, think about this too. Like, if you're not a sports junkie, what do you know about Fran Tarkenton? Or what do you know about?
Yeah, that's
About, you know,
but I'm thinking more like Michael Vick. I'm thinking Vick didn't win anything. Vick didn't get to a Super Bowl. I don't remember. I think he got to one NFC championship game in Atlanta.
Was it McNabb that the Eagles went to the Super Bowl with?
Yeah, and McNabb then was with
the Patriots.
Okay. Yep, that was McNabb.
Okay.
So to me, Vick is still, granted, Vick is now well known for other reasons, but I think he would have been known and heralded as this guy. I mean, Lamar comes on the scene and the first person that people think of is Michael Vick.
Yeah. So do you think people nowadays know about Michael Vick as being a talented and dynamic quarterback?
I guess I'm making the assumption yes, but maybe I also love this sport so much. So maybe I'm carrying some of my own, you know, and projecting that onto it, but.
And also enjoy the moments, right? Of like, there's the moments you grew up watching, right?
Yep.
Of Vick and stuff like that. And so
we
remember that we recall the memories of what he did to teams and defenses and how just elusive and phenomenal he was. I mean, I think another case for it too is Kaepernick, right? Kaepernick was a phenomenal, fast and talented guy. And then defenses started figuring him out and they realized that he can't throw. And so they just realized he can't throw worth a damn. They started, you know, putting more guys in the box, and you couldn't run anymore, right? And that's what let him out of the NFL.
I'm just waiting for Lamar Jackson to rip my Packers heart out one time, and then he fits in those Kaepernick,
Kaepernick and Vic. Yeah. But I think that's why, you know, I don't know if anyone that would say, you know, Kaepernick is a great quarterback or
that's a fair point. I think Lamar right now is in that category. I think he's in the category of, if he can't run,
to his credit, I think Kaepernick is a better, you know, I think he's faster than Kaepernick. I think he is
Jackson. Yeah.
I think he's got a better arm than Kaepernick ever did. I mean, Kaepernick just couldn't throw the ball down the field. That's all it was. He his arm strength wasn't there.
He has more innate talent for sure.
Yeah, I think
Lamar does, right?
And I think if he were to stick around, I think he'll be better. But again, we see that, like, we're seeing this right now with Patrick Mahomes, right?
Yeah,
we're seeing that, like, okay, that's what makes these guys with like these dynamic duos so special.
They did it for years.
They did it for such a long time, and we don't understand just how hard that is to do.
Right.
To go out and do and be successful over and over at a high level all the time when defenses, you know, there's so much film against you. There's so much, you know, preparation against you. It'd be interesting to see. I think that Lamar Jackson is the most the Joe Flacco Lamar Jackson is the most interesting thing. I put Flacco on there. I think you got to give him some respect for what he was able to do, get the Super Bowl and that one year he had.
Sure.
Again, not a, you know,
a little bit of an outlier.
Think about it. You know, the Chicago Bears went to a Super Bowl with Rex Grossman and almost won again with Jay Cutler. Right.
Right.
So like, you don't have to have, you know, a great quarterback to make a Super Bowl appearance.
Right. Right.
And maybe Flacco is just kind of the product, you know, even Peyton Manning in his Super Bowl with Denver.
That
was a defensive win right there. He wasn't that, he didn't play that well. So it's hard for me to judge Flacco for having a decent year in the Super Bowl. And then,
he had a great
Manning
that.
For having a really
right
blah year and then winning the championship with them, but being like, okay, Manning's, you know, one of the best because he won two titles.
Right. Which is why I think, and you know, what you're saying, I think is kind of what we were just talking about, which is longevity. You know, Manning is Manning and treated as such because of his longevity and how good he was. And we excuse the Denver Super Bowl year because of how good he was when he was throwing like he just wet noodle. Like he was at the end, you know, he was just done. So for me, the thing with Flacco is just that one's borderline as far as longevity. And then obviously we got to wait and see with Lamar. I guess my point is I'm just always going to be a wait and see guy. I'm a wait and see guy. I'm Patrick Mahomes. I'm a wait and see guy. I think out of these three, the only guy I'm not a wait and see on would be Russell Wilson. To me, he's solidified himself already. Granted, we're anticipating his career continues a little bit, but I would say even if he's done after this year, I think Wilson deserves a lot of credit for what he's done in Seattle to date.
Yep.
Whereas guys like Dak missing the year last year, Lamar, some on and off injuries, some on and off, you know, quarterbacking, you know, completion issues or things like that. I think those guys are definitely, I would say out of the list of these three, those are the most intriguing to me because to me, Russell already kind of has it in the bag as far as being someone that is up there in these mentions. But it'll be interesting to see. Dak is having an incredible year with Mike McCarthy. Kellen Moore, but whoever you want to give credit to, Jerry Jones takes all the credit. So just give it to Jerry.
I told a Cowboys friend of mine recently that I said, just wait. One of these days, Mike McCarthy is going to not call a timeout, or do some of the clock management or something that's going to ruin your season.
Yeah,
I'll let you know as a lifelong Packers fan.
It. Yeah.
It's gonna happen. Let you know now before you. Go home.
I told somebody the other day, I feel a little bit, and I'll just preface it. This is downright disrespectful to Mike McCarthy, Super Bowl winning champ or coach, but it's kind of like when someone comes and watches your dog, right? And like when he calls timeouts, it's like, hey, your dog peed in the living room. And you just go, yeah, he does that. Like from time to time, he does that. You know, I feel that way when I hear Cowboy fans complain about Mike McCarthy's time management. Yeah, he does that.
Yeah, sometimes that just happens sometimes.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as offensively and what the Cowboys look like, Dak looks great being back. They're a fun. I'm not a huge Cowboys fan. I'll go on record as saying they were the team that ruined my childhood. So there's a lot of personal animosity towards that organization. But as far as just a fun thing to watch, and honestly, it's impossible, at least for me, to not root for Dak after coming back and to see him doing really well. I don't wish them to win a championship, but I do enjoy watching them play. And I enjoy watching him play. I think if Dak can continue to be where we think he can continue to be, I think he will, you know, find himself on this type of list. And then, you know, years down the road, we're talking about Romo Dak, as far as, you know, one of these dynamic duos. I'm always going to be the wait and see guy. I'm always going to be the, you know, give it a few years. And see what pans out. But that's what's fun about these going back in review. That's why we enjoy, I know for myself, I don't want to speak for you, but that's why I enjoy these on further review type episodes. I love going back into the history because when enough time passes, you really realize like what the greatness of a moment, the greatness of a career, the greatness of, you know, an organization to have two of these guys back, you know, any of these guys, let alone a couple of them paired back to back or a year apart or something like that. Like that's what just makes it interesting is the time that goes on. So for mm-hmm. these guys like Lamar and Dak, like we're going to watch, we're going to wait and see. And I'll be honest, you know, for the most part, I'm rooting for these guys. I'm cheering for these guys to do well and to be what we think they can be, because it's fun for the game. Like Lamar yeah. is awesome for the game. Dak being back in the Cowboys offense is great for the game. Mm-hmm. You know, even their defense stepping it up down there in Dallas too. Like it's just, you know, guys like Mike McCarthy and, you know, Dan Quinn getting a second shot, guys yep. like, you know, yep. John Harbaugh, that's just been grinding. You know, it's fun to see these are organizations. These are players that I feel like not only are we waiting to see what they'll be or what their careers look like as they wrap them up, hopefully many years from now. But even in the moment, it's just fun to watch these guys and to think like, oh, could they be like these greats of old? You know, could they be like these stalwarts that we mentioned of years gone by?
It's interesting to think too, right? So we began the episode talking about Bledsoe and Brady. So, you know, 20 years ago, one of the top quarterbacks in the league is suddenly overshadowed by this upstart kid from Michigan named Tom Brady. So who are the guys playing today who tomorrow could be overshadowed by the next, you know, great quarterback and just make a completely, it just, to me, it's interesting to think about, like, just 20 yeah. years ago, Bledsoe was the top of his game and he was the $100 million man and right. Pro Bowl appearances and Super Bowl appearances and really on a star, you know, on track to do great things in the NFL and having yeah. done great things in the NFL. So who's that? It's interesting to think about, like, you know, a couple years from now, we could be talking about like, oh man, you know, Dak Prescott was special, but he wasn't as nearly good as the guy who came after him and replaced him off the bench. You know, whoever it may be, that's what makes football so fun is you just never right. know of what could happen. And
yeah,
20 years ago, like this time, 20 years ago, Drew Bledsoe was the guy,
right?
Not Tom Brady.
He was probably later, how we talk about Dak right now. Like, hey, can't yeah. wait to see what this kid continues to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what happens just in a couple, you know, the next 20 years. What are we talking yeah. about? Are we still talking about these guys? Are we still talking about this kind of thing? Or who's the next superstar? So it'd right. be interesting to see and hopefully these guys have longevity and play for a long time. They're fun to watch. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All these, you know, Wilson, I think Wilson, you know, obviously the older of the three.
Yeah.
But yeah. Wilson's fun to watch, obviously, but Dak Prescott and Lamar Jackson, still dynamic quarterbacks and super fun to watch, but you know, so was Bledsoe. And
yeah.
Now we kind of consider him as an afterthought. So
right.
who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, we're here for the ride. We're here to watch it, you know, take place and all pan out. And what we want to do here, as you guys know, on this episode or on this podcast is just to look back at those guys and to not forget about them, to remember those guys that have come before type of deal. Even when they get overshadowed by their successor, like a Bledsoe, you know, like, you know, I don't know if Rodgers has reached that with Favre yet. I think Favre's always beloved, but some of these guys, you know, get overshadowed by their successor and the guy that comes after, you know, if Herbert does that, where people forget about Philip, you know, if Herbert goes off and wins two Super Bowls in his time,
one Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah. Or even a Super Bowl for Los Angeles now. Yeah. You know, what happens to the legacy or the thought behind Philip Rivers? You know, those are guys that just as we appreciate the sport, can't be forgotten, got to be remembered. You know, these guys that were just incredible in their own right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, and maybe years from now, you know, we'll look back and see some of these guys. See, I guarantee you this. I'm willing to bet and promise this. Years from now, we will look back and there will be some of these guys that we go, wow, they had quite a career. But there will also be guys that we have not talked about, guys that we have maybe even never heard of at this point, that that'll also be the new thing and the new up and coming, or the new robust guy that comes in and takes over for a legend. It's as time passes, these things just continue, you know, to kind of roll over into the next. And as we look back at history, that's something that's incredible to see, is these people, these organizations and these quarterbacks that rolled over from one great or one just really good Pro Bowl type caliber quarterback to the next. And that's what this list is. That's what this is.
Yeah, completely agree there. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who those lists are. I also curious too if it's gonna, if there will be another position too that kind of, like right now the quarterback is the face of the franchise, right? It's the the one we look at, right? A couple decades ago it was the running back,
right?
So I wonder too if as the game evolves, right?
Yeah,
is the pass rusher going to be the new face of the franchise, as far as the guy that you want to get high on the draft pick and right. really develop, because that's the guy that can counter. It's all, you know, it's
moves action, counteraction, yeah, right?
So it'll be interesting to see if a couple, maybe 20 years from now, we're talking about who the best edge rushers are, who the, you know, and guys like that. It'd be interesting just to see how that evolves over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still a fun game and fun to look back on these guys and consider, you know, these dynamic duos. It's cool that the quarterback position as a position, even throughout the years, is still going to be massively important. And regardless of what happens with the game, I think it still remains massively important. You know,
it'll be interesting to see
who the next dynamic duo is. You have guys who are great right now, and can they pair it with the next guy?
Right.
You know, what's going to happen 20 years from now, but we'll still be around. Don't worry. We'll still have the podcast 20 years from now from the deck of the Virgin Galactica, whatever it is. And we'll still be around and
still put it out content. Yes, well, we appreciate you all for joining us for this episode on breaking down dynamic duos, specifically quarterbacks in the NFL, in NFL history. Stay tuned, as we'll be talking here in a little while too, catching up on different storylines and current events of the world of sports, specifically probably football, as we get kind of closer and closer to the
maybe
middle
some
part
lacrosse
of the season.
Action. You know,
maybe
Johns
Micah
Hopkins,
brings in the
Johns
lacrosse.
Johns Hopkins lacrosse is a powerhouse to be contended with. That's literally the only thing of sports-related things that my Hopkins is actually decent at. So.
There you go.
Maybe we'll plug them for a little bit. That's the only thing we actually, you know, can lay claim to.
Yeah, no worries. Well, yeah. I'm bored just talking about it, but maybe we'll bring that up as well.
Okay.
So we appreciate you all for listening. And this has been On Further Review.